The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. Welcome to an hour of talk radio, music, comedy, reminiscence, and rage, coming to you one more time from the Merrick Cage of WGBB AM 1240. Actually, it's two more times. We've got two more shows to do from this studio, which, if you were listening to the station at all the past couple of weeks, my show or anybody else's, you know has been gutted almost down to the bricks. A whole bunch of stuff happened very quickly, the gist of it being that the station manager, who was also chief cook and bottle washer and bottle maker and bottle filler, was fired 3 weeks ago, and one of the technical engineers quit with her in support and for other reasons, and they both took everything that they themselves either owned or put money into. Now that means equipment, wires, posters, chairs, desks, turntables. They literally made the place, which was already Spartan in trappings, look as if Uday Hussein had looted it. So, credit to the current management, they came back in and replaced a lot of the equipment. Not all of it compatible with the old equipment, that's been fun, but at least the phone lines work, the CDs play, the microphones pick up sound. But then the other shoe dropped, because so many show hosts had programs put together and nurtured by station manager Joey. When she went, they went. And if you've been tuning into GBB the last couple of weeks, half of what you've been hearing during the evenings when the station isn't Chinese Radio Network are reruns of shows or filler programs like Power Lines and Animal Planet Radio. They're old shows the station keeps on file just to fill open slots in the schedule, and there have been tons of those since the turnover. Anyway, I did a live show two Sundays ago when things were still in chaos, when no one knew what the next day would bring. And I think I spent half my days on the phone with various people still at the station or folks who left just to piece together some kind of rational picture of an almost surreal situation. And then something wonderful happened. I went away. I got away from all the phone calls, the emails, the IMs, the questions, the non-answers, the wrong answers, the complaints, and the confusion. And I escaped on a long-planned trip to Minnesota, of all places, for a conference of the American Theater Critics Association, of which I've been a member for 12 years or so. And while Minnesota may not be Key West or the Bahamas, it sure did the trick of pulling my head out of all of this and into a vacation mode. So I put together a last-minute program to play on the 15th, when I wasn't in town, and I wanted to do a special Father's Day show, even pre-recorded an interview with my dad, but because of all the madness, I wasn't given the opportunity to record a proper program in advance. So I just grabbed some old tapes of my appearances on other WGBB shows, Teen America, which no longer exists, and Joe Salzone Live, which probably will continue in the weeks ahead. And it made a pretty cool show last week. The Teen America segment was recorded right in the midst of the Iraqi War, just when it was clear we were going to kick butt, and the Salzone show was back from November, when we were still debating if there'd be a war. So, anyway, I wasn't around all last week, and it was a blessing. But the first thing I found out when I returned was that one big rumor was true. No, WGBB is not going all Chinese. And no, WGBB is not going to merge signals with another station owned by the same company. But yes, WGBB is evacuating beautiful downtown Merrick and going to the same location as the other station, WNYG, and that is all the way out in Babylon. In 1999, that was bought, or GBB was bought by Multicultural Broadcasting. Now that's not a generic term, that's the name of the company. Multicultural Broadcasting. They made it a student station for a while. Then it became leased time, mostly devoted to Christian and gospel programming. Pretty similar to this one, actually, without the all-day Mandarin. So, once the station manager of GBB was gone, a couple of the main engineers, half the original programming, and the building we're in being sold to a health club, well, there was really no reason to keep WGBB in Merrick. So, as of July 1st, yes, that soon the station is moving to Babylon. Now, the mast, the antenna, that's staying in Freeport. The operation of a station doesn't necessarily have to be where the antenna is. Remember, all the TV stations and radio stations that had their antennas at the World Trade Center, but the buildings were all over the place. Thank goodness, actually. Same with GBB. The offices and the programming will come out of Babylon, but the frequency will still be Nassau County. Now, whether they bump the frequency to its full 1,000 watts so that people more than two blocks away from Freeport can finally hear it, that's another story. So next week, we'll tell the tale as far as the future of Dave's Gone By. It may be the last episode on this station. I hope it's not. A lot of things have to be worked out. First among them, whether the station's website and web streaming will be back. Both were pulled down during the regime change, so all the listeners I had around the country, plus people locally who couldn't get me clearly on their AM dials, but could listen via WGBB.com, all those folks have not been able to hear the show the past couple of weeks. And losing that audience has just been brutal as far as morale, not to mention drumming up advertising and sponsorship for the program. The good news is that, no matter what, I do intend for Dave's Gone By to continue. If not here, then on another station or possibly just on the internet. There may be a hiatus, a few weeks in between where the show is and where it will wind up. But I'm not going away. I've made too many fans, I've had too much of a great time, I've gotten too much accomplished to let this be the finale of something that was just getting rolling. Now, as I said, I'll be on next week, next Sunday, 8 to 9 p.m., no matter what. I mean, barring an act of God or a crazy Shiite. But July 6th, and beyond that, I don't know yet. But I can let you know. If you want to be kept apprised of where Dave's Gone By will be, make sure to get on my email list. To send your name and email address to me at davesgoneby@aol.com. That's davesgoneby, no apostrophe, @aol.com. And we'll send out an email to alert you of where and when Dave's Gone By will be broadcast next. Please remember, this mailing list is free to join, and the list of names isn't being sold or used for any kind of outside advertising purposes. It's just a way for me to keep in touch with you. If you like the show, the comedy, the sketches, the interviews, the news gone by, the whole gestalt of the thing, then send your email address to davesgoneby@aol.com. Well, I don't want to belabor the laborious struggles of WGBB, especially when I have so much else to get to tonight. I want to tell you about my trip to Minneapolis and St. Paul, a tale of twin cities, complete with fabulous food, flying wieners, and tornadoes in a tube. You'll never think of Minnesota quite the same way again. Plus, we've got the news gone by, a lovely batch of current events to skewer and smirk at, and music, including tunes by Robin Hitchcock and Bob Dylan. The fun begins in just a minute, but I do need to say that this program is rated DGB-13. That's my own rating system, just to caution people that certain words and subject matter might not be appropriate for the little monsters you like to call your children. No obscene language or anything like that, nothing FCC 21. Even so, the program can sometimes get closer to a rubber room than a romper room. But whether you like to rub or romp, stay tuned because Dave's Gone By is a mix of smart talk, silly talk, music and musings from the bemused From the bemused mind of a guy named Dave, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, humorist and theater critic, that's me, taking you from now till 9 o'clock, oh, and I'm also going to be a guest on the 10 to 11 hour tonight. Engineer Joe Salzone is hosting the time slot, and he's invited me to go on there with him and do some yakety-yak. So, you got a double dose of Dave tonight. Now till 9, and then 10 to 11. All you gotta do is leave the station right where it is. 1240 on your AM dial, WGBB, temporarily in Merrick, always in your heart. And we'll begin with a hearty news gone by, just 60 little seconds from now. Pat Benatar has a fan club, Hudson Leak has a fan club, and I don't even know who the hell he is. So I'm darn proud that Dave's Gone By has a fan club, the Bystanders, where you get neat stuff like a weekly special email, an autographed membership card, eligible for discounts on show merchandise, and a one-hour best-of audio tape with gems from the show and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. Plus, you got a Dave's Gone By on-the-air greeting. I'll say your name and mention your company or service. Or I'll send out a birthday, anniversary, or get-well wish to the person of your choice. Pretty good fan club, huh? And it's only $12 to join. For the email, the best of audio tape, the on-air greeting, just make a $12 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. If you join via PayPal, use the email address davesgoneby@aol.com. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:10 p.m. and time for the News Gone By, a look at events of the past week from a St. Pauli boy's perspective. We begin with the local news. Traffic in Plainview, Long Island, was disrupted Tuesday morning when a tanker truck overturned and spilled 7,000 gallons of molten tar on the LIE. Road crews worked all day to clean up the mess. Police weren't so much concerned about accidents as about the people who got out of their cars and started drinking the spillage. When asked why in God's name they were doing that, one driver said, "Wait, you mean this isn't Starbucks?" More commuter news. For weeks, I've been bitching about the Metropolitan Transit Authority fare hikes. I think they're unjust, maybe even illegal, considering that the MTA was keeping two sets of books and not telling anyone where the money was actually going. Well, I take it back. Now we've learned where the extra 50 cents for buses and rails is being put. Now we know what the step-up fare on the LIRR is stepping in. Workmen have been installing new floor tiles at the East 86th Street subway station. Not just any tiles, mind you, but imported Italian tiles. Ooh, and I understand that. It's nice to have high-quality materials. I love the mosaic patterns on the walls at several stations. They beautify an ugly place. Only one problem with the current project. These are floor tiles, and during all the rainy weather these past weeks, they've been incredibly slippery. One witness claimed more than a dozen people have slid and fallen on the platform over these things. And what's more, until Newsday did a story about it, the MTA had no plans to stop using the tiles or replace them with something more abrasive. Although, now they're reconsidering. On the positive side, the MTA is bringing back its very popular Miss Subways contest. I hear the winner for 2003 is Anna Karenina. Tragic news from Orlando, Florida. A 12-year-old boy swimming in the aptly named Dead River was dragged under and chomped to death by a 10-foot alligator. Asked to comment on the incident, one wildlife expert said, "Oh, he's gorgeous! What a beauty! Just look at him tearing into that pildis! He loves it!" In religious news, Thomas O'Brien has resigned from his job as Bishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Phoenix, Arizona. He was arrested for leaving the scene of an accident. Though a pedestrian was killed in the hit-and-run, the priest just drove away. Now, police tracked O'Brien down and found his car windshield caved in, so he now faces felony charges and up to 4 years in prison. The 67-year-old cleric told police he thought he'd hit a dog or a cat, or someone had thrown a rock at his windshield. Yeah, whatever works, dude. The irony is that O'Brien had already struck a deal with the feds to avoid prosecution for letting priests with molestation records continue to work with children. Paul Pfaffenberger, head of an advocacy group for victims of abuse by the clergy, told the Associated Press, quote, "O'Brien's decision with sexual abuse was to discredit, deny, or run away from victims and protect his priests. Faced with a traffic accident, he once again ignored the victim and drove away. For his part, O'Brien still claims innocence, noting that leaving the scene of an accident and molesting an altar boy are two entirely different things. After all, he says, there's a difference between roadkill and load spill." If you were a priest, I would wipe at least up into confession time and crawl into your box, breathing like a fox, hunting for a session time, and I'd run a lot of time away to be with you. So please don't. the news gone by. In health news, remember a couple of weeks ago when I mentioned that partial birth abortions are likely to be banned in this country? That's not so bad, but it might open the floodgates for restrictions on abortions altogether. Well, who should come along in the middle of this right-wing conservative political administration to make things even worse but Norma McCorvey, a.k.a. Jane Roe? Back in 1973, little Norma was a 21-year-old carnival barker and slut pregnant with her third child. She had already given up the first two for adoption, but this one she wanted to terminate. And that was illegal in Texas back then, so she sued. Eventually, she won the right to an abortion, although, ironically, the decision in her favor didn't come down until she'd already given birth and sent her third baby out for adoption. The Roe v. Wade decision gave women the option of ending their own pregnancies, or not, and therefore controlling the rights to their own bodies. Now Jane Roe, a.k.a. Norma McCorvey, has become an anti-abortion activist, and she wants the original case overturned. Thank heaven a judge dismissed her lawsuit, and the landmark decision stands. But, regarding McCorvey, first of all, I think it's funny that this woman has become the symbol for, and now against, abortions. She never had one. She was so busy pumping out brats for adoption. Ask her what a DNC is, she'll say diapers and carrots. The closest she ever got to a coat hanger was the peg on her wall where her boyfriends used to hang their jockstraps. Now, second of all, have you seen pictures of this woman? I mean, maybe she was cute when she was younger, but what I don't understand is how she got pregnant three times in the first place. I wouldn't bang her with Phyllis Schlafly's dick. Dick, by the way, being her good friend Richard, just so we don't make any FCC enemies here. Now, how this woman got three penises to go even near her stumpy little cottage cheese thighs is a wonder of the world even the Egyptians couldn't manage. Now you figure, after the first pregnancy, she would have learned her lesson. Or, you know, her partners would have. And then again, she's so homely, her body probably functions as an anti-magnet. Any guy who wants to pull out and ejaculate on her face, the penis is like, oh, no, I ain't putting my head next to that head. You may be desperate, boy, but I still got some pride. Damn, just put me back inside. At least it's warm in there and so dark I can't see the ugly. But seriously, this woman who fought the good fight for women's rights, she sees a couple of movies of fetuses getting their jelly brains sucked out, and now she wants to make up her mind for everyone else. If you think abortion's cruel, if you think it's tragic, don't have one. If you're so worried about murdering the unborn, take some of that energy and put it towards all the born people dying, getting murdered in bad neighborhoods, or starving to death, or wasting away in old age homes. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Until you can care for all the born, there's no need to be saving all the unborn. If you want to say that a 6 or 7 month old fetus is already on the way to being a person, well, maybe that's true, and it's a fair compromise to stop the partial births. But younger than that, it's a blob. It's a slinky with a heartbeat. It's a living thing, but just a thing. And for a woman to have to live 9 months with an unwanted thing inside her body, a tumor that she has to bring to term whether she likes it or not, and then go through the heartbreak of giving it away when it's born, that's the real cruelty. That's why abortion must be kept legal, and that's why Jane Roe should keep her mouth closed. Then again, why should we expect her to do something with her mouth that she couldn't do with her legs? In lighter health news, a Pasadena clinic has invented an electronic nose. I'm not kidding, a mechanical nose that is able to smell someone's breath and tell whether that person has lung cancer or not. The device, nicknamed Cyranose, takes down a smell print, which has different patterns depending on the health of the patient. The nasal invention needs to be tweaked for more sensitivity, and some skeptics are poo-pooing, but even they are excited about the potential for early cancer detection by Cyranose. I do think the makers could have come up with a better slogan than, if you think you're sick, ours is the nose to pick. But hey, I'm keeping my business out of their nose. I only hope they don't blow it. Yes, yes, ladies and gentlemen, you know that sound. It's the sound of the comedy bell signaling the return of the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Every week, well, nearly every week, we make a play on words so foul, so odoriferous, so stinky, even Cyranos would be dripping with contempt. And that's why we ring the comedy bell. It's a signal that Dave's Gone By is the place to hear excruciatingly bad jokes like these. And we thank Leviathan Media Group for sponsoring this week's horrendous pun. For your web building and remote broadcasting needs, it's Leviathan Media Group, hardworking, pioneering, and proudly unashamed to sponsor the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. Continuing with health news, Japanese genetic engineers have apparently discovered a method of growing coffee plants with 70% less caffeine in them. These plants, with modified RNA, could be an alternative to the often weak or funny-tasting decaf coffees. That's because the beans themselves would be low in caffeine, rather than having it bleached out of them in a chemical process. Now, I happen to have a batch of this new coffee. I've been drinking it all evening. It tastes great. Just kidding. News from the Census Bureau. Hispanics are now the largest minority group in America. The latest count shows that 38.8 million people in America identify themselves as being of Hispanic origin. This now surpasses the 36 million people considered black. Not surprisingly, the government is taking this shift in ethnicity very seriously. The Senate, Congress, and CIA are all working to make sure that Hispanics reach the same level of alcoholism, crack addiction, and low-paid wage slavery that blacks have enjoyed in this country for decades. In entertainment news, coming to Radio City Music Hall in October is a big new concert starring the one and only Frank Sinatra. What? He's been dead 5 years? Why, that's a mere trifle. Using modern technology, the Radio City show will bring Sinatra back to life in concert, complete with four dancing rockettes and a 40-piece orchestra. The show, Sinatra, His Voice, His World, His Way, uses film and video footage of Old Blue Eyes and projects it onto giant screens and three-dimensional cubes. Those cubes will move around the stage, giving the illusion of a real live concert. As a special treat, a life-size puppet of Sinatra will beat the crap out of Ava Gardner's holograph. Some entertainment news from Germany. Viewers of a cable TV documentary about the human body got more detail than they bargained for when... Engineer Joe liked that one. Viewers of a cable TV documentary about the human body got more detail than they bargained for when scenes of hardcore pornography bled in from another channel. Cable carriers apparently mixed up the feed for the XXP documentary network and the Spice Platinum channel. Even better, the voiceover for the documentary continued playing over the porno scenes. Outraged elderly viewers called to complain, forcing the Berlin network to issue this apology. "We're sorry if the sight of naked men and women making love disturbs you. From now on, we will only show footage you're comfortable with, naked men and women being shoveled into ovens." And speaking of German brutality, this one comes from Reuters. I'm just going to read it verbatim. There's no need to embellish this one. 60 German police officers rushed to douse a quarrel that erupted when a family barbecue overheated into unbridled violence. One man was repeatedly stabbed in the bottom with a skewer. "We needed about an hour and a half to calm things down," said a police spokesperson. He said the ruckus was between some 40 individuals from three families in Berlin's Tiergarten Park. It began when a... Sorry, but I just find this amazing. Again, this is all verbatim. It began when a 6-year-old boy was struck in the face with a stick by another unidentified boy. In the ensuing melee, the victim's 19-year-old brother received multiple wounds to his hindquarters from an assailant's thrust with a grilling skewer, and he was later treated in a hospital amid the flying fists and hair pulling. And remember, folks, July 4th is coming up, so you can do this too. Two young women battered a 42-year-old lady on the ground with folding chairs. A man had his leg broken, and two young boys were thrashed with a belt and throttled. Police made several arrests. 8 people charged with causing grievous bodily harm, unquote. Said one attendee, "It was awful, but fascinating. I never knew you could put an entire volleyball net up there." Some more violent news. This one closer to home. Oh, I can't watch Engineer Joe. It's I'm glad he's laughing, but still. In Brooklyn, 220-pound Anna Reinhardt clubbed her boyfriend to death with a blunt object, her size 12 high-heeled shoe. She claims it was self-defense, only hitting him after he punched her in the mouth and knocked out two front teeth. Reinhardt is charged with manslaughter and criminal possession of a weapon, her shoe. It may sound strange to call a woman's shoe a deadly weapon, but then again, she did polish him off. And that's the news gone by for June 22nd, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and barbecue skewers to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email me at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letters and emails on the air, name withheld upon request, and folks, I said it last week, and I'll say it again, if there was ever a time to either get on our mailing list or climb on board as an advertiser or sponsor or join the Bystanders Club, it's now. Because even if this program ends next week on this radio station, well, that could certainly happen, but even if we leave the station and jump to another one or to the internet, I intend for this show to continue. But it needs support, it needs money, it needs positive word of mouth, it needs people recommending the show to station managers and program directors and satellite feeders. Not only can you save this show, you can help it get to the next level. So be there for Dave's Gone By as we've been there for you. Drop me an email at davesgoneby@aol.com or snail mail Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no Italian tiles. Well, maybe just once and I'll let it slide. Back in a minute. Performing Arts Insider. Three words that represent a whole world of entertainment found on Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret. Hundreds of productions to see and enjoy. But how can you keep them all straight? Performing Arts Insider. The guide to everything that's happening on the stages of New York. For six decades, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. Each issue lists hundreds of shows, who wrote them, what they're about, who's in the cast, the designers, the producers, box office info, parental guides, reviews of what's good, what's bad, and why. Plus, listings for opera, dance, and awards, too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider puts all the facts at your fingertips. To subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's just about exactly 8:30 p.m. on WGBB AM 1240. And I am back in New York, rainy New York, after an absolutely gorgeous week in Minnesota. I mean, it was just dumb luck that for the week I was there, I just missed the rain and there was never any oppressive heat. Totally lucked out. While I heard that in New York, well, it rained a lot. Big surprise. Has it rained every weekend here for the past 6 weeks? Is that what it's been? Plus every other weekday, too? I really don't recall anything like it. I think June was, in fact, a record. So as I said at the top of the show, I was thrilled to get away. Excited about ditching the crappy New York weather. Jazzed to see a city I've never seen before. Two cities. That's the name of this episode, by the way. A Tale of Twin Cities, because I went to a convention in St. Paul and Minneapolis last week. And I wanted to take a few minutes and share some highlights and lowlights from an overall wonderful trip. Now, the first thing about St. Paul and Minneapolis is that they may be twinned, but they're not quite next door. You don't just go to the borderline of Minneapolis and say, I think I'll step into St. Paul to buy some milk. They're actually about 15 miles apart, so when you're relying on public transportation or cabs, that can get a little pricey or at least inconvenient. But they're both fully developed cities with art scenes, restaurants, museums, theaters, everything a city needs, only the people are generally nicer. We were standing in a small park near the hotel overlooking the Mississippi River, and there are tiles inset in some of the stonework there. No, not imported Italian tiles. This is the Upper Midwest, not the Upper East Side. Anyway, there were red terracotta-type tiles. One had a picture of a railroad train, another had a different design, and another had an artist's rendering of a human face, but an ugly, pug-nosed face of a middle-aged mook squinting and sneering at the same time. And under the carving, the words, Pig's Eye, which is not exactly what you'd expect in a picturesque alcove with a little fountain and colored lights and trees and bugs. That time of year, lots of flying bugs. But Joyce and I were standing there, laughing at this image and taking a photo of it, and this nice and elderly gentleman ambled by, volunteered to take our picture, and noticed we were goofing on Pig's Eye. And he gave us the whole story, briefly, about the guy being Pierre Pig's Eye Parent, an 18th century fur trapper turned bootlegger who ran a famous local tavern. He had moved down from Canada and started running booze to both the Indians and Union soldiers. Eventually, the locals looked askance at his business practices, so he picked up and moved to Winnipeg, but he's fabled in Minnesota lore because he was the first European settler in what is now St. Paul. And it was great hearing the story from this old fella because, you know, he had the accent. You know, I can't do the accent, but it's that whole Die Upers moose hunting kind of jargon, you know. And he took our picture, and he even told us to catch the weekly classic car lineup along Kellogg Street. Just a bunch of guys who own top-notch condition automobiles from the 20s through the 60s showing them off. Kind of fun, not my thing, but some other events in Minnesota were definitely my thing. First of all, two blocks from the hotel, possibly the best science museum I've ever been to. Now, I'm not big on science, so I prefer museums with paintings and photos in them, but the Minnesota Science Museum was way cool. No better way to describe it. Way cool. Probably the most interactive museum I've ever come across. Every single exhibit involved the viewer in some way. I mean, they had the usual giant dinosaurs and the posters about geological formations, but also so many hands-on displays, and they all worked. How many times have you been in museums where you go to play with something, you want to listen to the announcer talk about it through the speaker, or the thing's supposed to light up, or the diorama is supposed to move and it just sits there. These things, I can't think of an exhibit that was either closed or broken or anything. And there were three floors of things to see. The weird part is you enter on the fifth floor, and then you go to the fourth, the third, the first, because I think everything's on this high level, and all the rest is down. It makes you feel kind of odd. But the cool stuff from all the exhibits, the one I'll most remember, first of all, there's a tornado in a tank. What you do is you start hitting this button, and water starts to swirl, and it's in this glass enclosure, and you literally see a tornado take shape. The water swirls around, and you see, I don't really remember how it happens, because I said I don't know my science, but it's this really neat thing to see this actual occurrence in that kind of closed environment. And then what's really amazing is in the gift shop, you can buy little baby tornadoes in a bottle. I should have gotten that. It was pretty neat. And kind of on the same note, another exhibit had shifting sands. If you want to know how, like, the Sahara changes, and I guess in a more geological and long-term way, how rock formations change all over the globe, you turn this crank, and the sands shift and move when the wind blows them around and around and around, and you see them kind of moving, so big plateaus and hills, kind of those go down, and then other mountains start to come up. Then you turn the crank the other way, and it sort of shifts again, and the sand goes in different places, and you can see an entire geological change happening within a matter of seconds. Really cool. And I think my favorite, and I haven't stopped talking about this since I've been home, much to my wife's delight, is the Great Air Cannon. Now, I've been told that this is in a lot of museums, but I never really got to play with one of these. It's kind of this machine with a cannon tube, but they're not firing bullets or cannonballs or anything, just air. Air shoots out of it at a very fast pace. And then you get this rubber ball, beach ball, sort of, but smaller, that goes on the end of it. So when it's standing straight up and the air current is going straight up, the ball stays on top, like 3 feet over the opening of the cannon, just swimming on a stream of air, going bobbity, 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 bobbity. Really cool. But the cooler part is you can tilt the cannon. You can tilt the almost not to a 45-degree angle, but I would say until about a 60-degree angle. And the ball will still stay in midair because you've got the airstream going over and around it and keeping it up depending on the weight of the ball and you know, the center of gravity. So you're always trying to just tip it a little further, the ball stays, a little further, the ball stays, bobbity, 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 bobbity. You tip it a little too much, and bam, it bounces, and you got to run and go get it. But I played with that, oh, my gosh, must have been 15 minutes, because, you know, I am borderline retarded. Now, of all these wonderful things in the museum, and there were a lot of delightful things about the human body and geology and all of it, probably the coolest, and I hate to say this, was in the bathroom, because there were posters. Even the bathroom was a learning experience. You could go, there was a chart on the wall devoted to toiletology, which told you how sewers work and how your plumbing was connected to, you know, the Hudson River, or, well, no, over there, I guess, would be the Mississippi, and treatment plants, and how, you know, everything came out in the end, literally. And then my wife, God bless her, said, no, Dave, you're missing one of the coolest things. Go into the actual stall. So I go in, I sit down, I close the door, and then there's another poster, a different one. And this is just totally bizarre. It's a cartoon of this little boy who really has to go to the bathroom. He's outdoors. He goes to a porta potty. He's sitting there with his pants off, and then some workman opens the door. He's like, oh, excuse me, little boy. And he's like, ah! And then they strike up a conversation. All the while, this little boy is on the bowl with this, like, you know, guy who's 30 years his senior talking to him about where his turds go when he's done with them. And then they show, you know, educationally how it goes through the river system and then into a sewage plant and treatment plant, and then it's all cleaned up and clean water then goes back into the Mississippi. And in the final frame of the cartoon, the best part is you see the man and the boy standing together looking out over the treatment facility and the Mississippi River, and the boy waves and he says, bye-bye, poopies! One of the most beautiful phrases in the history of the world, ladies and gentlemen, bye-bye, poopies. And I went to the museum gift shop, and I said, please, do you have this poster? And they were like, no. But anyway, speaking of cartoons, other things in Minnesota, I can't spend this whole segment on the Science Museum, although I would love to. You know, Charles M. Schulz was born in the state, and so there are Peanuts characters everywhere. Remember how the cows used to be around New York a couple of years ago? They've got Linuses and Lucys and Charlie Browns, but mostly Linuses. I guess they have Linus envy everywhere. And it's very cute. Everybody takes pictures with them. And the coolest thing is they have the psychiatrist's office that Lucy has, 5 cents. And there's somebody in there, but he doesn't give advice. He's just trying to sell T-shirts and stuff. But I thought the whole look of that was very cool. It's sort of a way to make you smile as you're going to work and passing every single block another Peanuts character. And there were also Peanuts characters in the Mall of America. Kind of overrated, if you ask me. It's a mall. It's just stores, but apparently the biggest mall in the country. Well, so what? I didn't get to go to the aquarium. It looked too crowded to bother with. Although the one thing I did see was a tank full of stingrays that you were apparently allowed to pet. Now, I don't know about you, but maybe people in Minnesota don't like their children as much, but I would not let my kids pet a stingray. But there was a petting zoo, and that was really cool. I was watching that, and, you know, cute little goats and things, up until, while I'm trying to watch that, here come the Dancing Peanuts characters, you know, these little actors dressed with big heads of Charlie Brown and Lucy and Linus and Schroeder, and they're all singing It's a Small, Small World. And that's when I knew we had to leave the Mall of America very quickly. Now, if Walt Disney and Charlie Brown aren't Americana enough for you, let's talk a little bit about the Minnesota Twins, because had to go to a Twins game. I was really there to see theater in the state with, as I said, the Critics Convention, and I saw some really high-quality professional stuff. Theater Jun Moon, which has been around for a while, they did an odd version, almost a Worcester Group performance arty version of Figaro, mixing play and musical and opera. And also there was a weird production of a weird play called Perfect Crime done by Jungle Theater. I really don't have time to talk about that stuff this episode. Maybe I'll get to it next week. But although I came for theater, I had to do baseball. It's just a natural thing. I never go to the baseball teams here at home, even though I'm sort of a Met fan. But when I'm in another state, I kind of want to check out their ballpark and see the team. So in Minneapolis, they've got an indoor stadium, Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. I swear to God, that's the name of it. 56,000 seat capacity. There were 30,000 people for the game that night because, you know, the weather was great. So, you know, weather's always great in the Dome Stadium. Happened to be a gorgeous night, so I missed having it out in the open air. That would have been nice. But, you know, if anybody was watching the Yankees and the Mets game last night, the Yankees were up 4-3 going into the third inning, and it was pouring rain. I mean, coming down in buckets, you could see just the sheets of rain streaming down, and they're playing, and they're playing. Now, I remember the old days. You know, a couple of drops of rain, and out came the Shea Stadium crew with a tarp, you know, and then they clean off the tarp a half hour later if it slowed up, or if it didn't, they call the game. Now there's so much money involved in baseball, and they're so greedy, that it literally takes a deluge for them to either postpone or cancel or really delay a game properly. Turned out yesterday, as we all know, we had a deluge, so they called the game after 3.5 innings, but even then, it shouldn't have taken them that long. So while I do have my problems with an indoor domed stadium, it does have its merits. And what's really cool about it is you don't feel it when you're in there, but there's a pressure going on because it's this big, huge balloon, really. So when you go out of the stadium, out the doors, you're going through like a wind tunnel, whoosh, and it feels really cool if you ever get to do that. Anyway, the game I saw, the Diamondbacks creamed the Twins. I mean, it wasn't even close by like the second or third inning, ended 10-3 or something like that. So, of course, we're in a stadium, we're hungry, it's dinner time. I go, I get a kielbasa because it's in the Midwest and Hormel is there. And I come back, I miss half an inning, I didn't really miss much. And the kielbasa was eh. So my wife's still hungry, she's like, I want a dome dog, I want a real hot dog. So I'm like, okay, I'll go back out, no big deal. I go out to the concession area for just to get a hot dog and a bag of chips. And I wait on the line. I wait about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, finally get to the front of the line. They're out of hot dogs. How they can be out of hot dogs in a baseball stadium, I do not know. But they said, wait another 5 minutes, we'll have them. I wander around. I try and go to another concessioner, a different, seemingly different establishment. And say, you know, I wait on another line for a couple of minutes. And they're like, no, sorry, we're out of hot dogs. It's going to be a couple of minutes. So obviously they're getting all meat from the same pig snouts from somewhere. So by that time I go back to the other concession line. I've already missed half an inning. I get back on the other line, finally I get my dome dog, I get my chips. I get back and I've missed an entire inning of baseball. Okay, no big deal. There were no runs, no hits, nothing really major happening. Except I get back to my seat and my wife tells me, oh, guess what you missed? I'm like, what? And she says, they have the Hormel hot dog chute. I'm like, what the hell is that? And she's like, well, they have this machine where they take hot dogs and they put them in, and it's this force pressure thing, and it's like a gun, and they shoot the hot dog into the stands, and then people grab it, and then they can eat it if they want to. And I'm like, I missed this? I'm going out standing on a stupid line for 20 minutes, and I missed one of the greatest events in modern history? So I was distraught. The idea of firing live meat into a stadium filled with 30,000 people. I think Hormel is wonderful for doing that, and I should mention, we didn't get to the Spam Museum, which is also in Minnesota. It's about 5.5 hours drive from St. Paul, but that's there, so I guess it's a big thing. I did get to see the Kiss Cam, the Face Morph Cam, and the Toss the Ball in the Bandicoot's Truck Cam, but I missed the hot dog shooter, so I've got to get back to St. Paul and Minneapolis and do that one more time. Now, I want to wrap this up real quick, but one thing about Minnesota that I already started to feel, even though I didn't go to Hibbing, which is the childhood home of Bob Dylan, kind of wanted to get there and sort of do Touchstone. I don't know if his house is still there, or if they've museumed it, or if just people are living there now, but it did occur to me while I was walking around, especially downtown Minneapolis, that you can sometimes hear references and feel Minnesota coming through Bob Dylan's music. It's not something I've ever felt really from New York. I always see him as positively 4th Street and that whole downtown, real gritty New York thing, and missing some of the stuff that's really tied in with Minnesota. And you can hear it in some of the lyrics, like in Went to See the Gypsy, he's got that, I watched the sun come rising from that little Minnesota town. Or in Something There Is About You, he mentions walking in the hills of Old Duluth. And the other one that I really was thinking about was Meet Me in the Morning off the Blood in the Tracks album. Now, he mentions a street called 56th and Wabasha. Wabasha is a street right in downtown St. Paul. And I looked on a map and it goes to like 45th, 46th, 47th, all the way up to 55th Street, but there is no 56th and Wabasha. So maybe he's goofing on that, or maybe I just missed it on the map. Or the other thing is, I looked on another map, and there's a Wabasha County 90 miles from Minneapolis. Maybe he was talking about that, but that's such a small town. There's no 56th Street there either. So, Bob, what were you talking about when you talked about Meet Me in the Morning? If you're a good American, that means you like to own things. Well, now's your chance. You can own a piece of my show. That's right, Dave's Gone By is ready to promote you. If you have a product, event, or service to hawk shamelessly, you can buy 30 or 60 seconds of advertising time on my show. You can even be a sponsor. Just imagine. This week's News Gone By is brought to you by you. We'll be right back after this word from your product. advertising on Dave's Gone By is cost-effective and reaches listeners not only on Long Island, but thanks to WGBB.com all over the world. To get a piece of the Dave, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. To see our disgustingly low ad rates, check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Remember, you could be talking to you right now. Are you listening? Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Thanks to you for listening to me as I come to you for the final dwindling days of WGBB at Merrick, Long Island. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, come July 1st, the station is moving out of Merrick and into Babylon. I can't say I have any particularly nostalgic memories of this station, this building. I've only been here since last October, and there's been so much weirdness and chaos and uncertainty and discontent. I can't start sobbing, boo-hoo, farewell to beautiful Lansdowne Avenue, goodbye lovely old-fashioned studio, because it really hasn't been like that. It's kind of a dump, yet still a home of sorts, just because everything's been so informal and the actual staff here so small. I should know by next week whether or not Dave's Gone By will travel with the station to Babylon. I'm hoping it will, but a lot of factors are still up in the air. Even if the show stays on GBB, there might be a hiatus depending on what's happening with the new studio and whether the all-important web streaming is back up and running. I think it's crucial that this program return to the Internet, no matter what happens. Now, if you're listening to me now, well, the web probably isn't a big concern for you, but if you're listening and the reception is poor or staticky or another station is bleeding through and you miss being able to hear a clear signal, then please make your presence known. Please email me your name and email address to davesgoneby@aol.com. Let me know if you listen to the show on the web or on a home stereo or in the car. Tell me if you think the show is fun and funny and weird and exasperating and just plain different, I hope. If you have any fondness for the show and want to help secure its future and know what its future will be, email davesgoneby@aol.com, no apostrophe, just davesgoneby@aol.com, and we'll put you on an email list with updates on our status. The list is free. It's not sold to any company or telemarketers. No salesman will call. It's just a way for me to tell you, here's what's coming up, and there's where you can hear it. Now, I will be on next week, June 29th, same time, 8 p.m. Sunday, but the week after that, I don't know. However, if you tune in July 6th and you don't hear me, don't automatically assume I'm gone. We might have moved to a different day or time. That's why you've got to send me the email or check the website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. All the info will be there, too. And if you want information about becoming an advertiser or sponsor for the show, which might sound goofy because so many things are in flux, but getting on board now puts you in a great and inexpensive position to be on the Dave's Gone By team before we start locking in, raising our rates, and having certain things be unavailable. Potential advertisers and sponsors, please call 516-295-1511, area code 516-295-1511. Leave a message and we'll give you everything you need to know and more. And if you're a listener who just wants to help the show with a non-tax-deductible contribution, you can buy audio cassettes of previous programs, priced to move. Or you can still join the Bystanders Club. Just $12 and you get a free best of audio tape and other cool stuff. Again, it's all on the website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Now, if you forget that URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By and we're right up top. Speaking of being up top, here's a couple of people who are tops in my book. Engineer Joe Salzone, thank you for your help this evening, and thank you for your invitation, which I heartily accept, to be your guest a little later on tonight. He has an hour to fill from 10 to 11, so we guang fill it together. I'm looking forward to it, so folks, stay tuned, 10 o'clock. There's a gospel show coming up at 9, maybe, but if you hang around or tune back in at 10, Joe will be here, I will be here, and we'll both speak extemporaneously about whatever. You have to tune in and find out. So thanks, Joe. Thanks also to my wife, Joyce. I never got to wish her a happy birthday on the air last week while we were away, so happy post-June 29th birthday, honey. Thanks for making the Twin Cities so enjoyable, and again for sticking by me during this up-in-the-air time for the show and the radio station. I love you. Kissy, kissy, kissy. Huggy, huggy, huggy. Oh, what the hell, it's Sunday night. Licky, 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 bangy, bangy, bangy. And I want to lick and bang every single one of you out there for listening and supporting this program. Now, next week might be the last one. Don't miss it. If it is the last show on this station, I'll definitely pull out some classic stuff and things you won't want to miss. So be here Sunday, 8 o'clock. Bring lubricant. And until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Going, and gone by.